answers. Look for God in life on distant planets. Have your faith in the ever after, while each of us holds inside the map to the labyrinth. And heaven's here on earth.
welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program starts out with a debate. Is reducing carbon emissions worth the cost? With potentially staggering costs involved, are efforts to make major reductions in carbon emissions even worth it? Would the money be better spent elsewhere? Or does the amount of money involved become less important when considering the possible consequences of climate change?
I'm John Donvan, your host and moderator for this Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, another in a series of, we hope, smart and scintillating programs debating topics that matter. The motion before us, major reductions in carbon emissions are not worth the money. This is a contest. It's a contest of logic and wit and mostly persuasion. These panelists are here to change your minds. You, the audience, are the judges. Now, we want to ask you at this point to register your views on this motion as you come in off the street before hearing any of the argument, because as I say, they are here to persuade you and to change your minds. So let's let the debate begin. Our motion is major reductions in carbon emissions are not worth the money. And arguing first for the motion, Bjørn Lomborg, he is from Denmark, the land that has led the globe in the development of wind power. It is an environmentalist's dreamland, but he is an environmentalist skeptic in many ways and is first to argue for the motion.
I'll speak for the motion that major reductions in carbon emissions are not worth the money. Let's be clear, global warming is real, but the brutal fact is that even major carbon cuts at dramatic cost will make little impact on temperature and do virtually nothing to help the world. Still, my honored opponents will spend hundreds or even thousands of billions of dollars to slightly reduce the impact of climate change 100 years from now. Today, 1 billion people lack clean drinking water, 2 billion people lack sanitation, 3 billion people lack simple micronutrients. As an example, 1 million people die from malaria each year, yet my esteemed opponents will focus on how global warming will cause a slight increase in malaria occurrence 100 years from now. But we could eradicate malaria right now if we wanted and at a lot lower cost. That is the moral choice. Of course, the obvious and easy thing is to say, well, we should do all good things. We should both make major carbon reductions and combat malaria. But this simply ignores the fact that we aren't doing either very well. We avoid the hard truth that the rich world's focus is shifting daily towards global warming, with proportional less support seen for other real and more tractable problems. Any company or organization today that wants to appear responsible, even just cool, will not be spending their cash in fighting tuberculosis, but wants to go carbon neutral. At the Copenhagen Consensus Project last year, a panel of the world's most distinguished economists looked at a wealth of research of all the major problems in the world and the possible solutions to them. They agreed that global warming is real, and they were unanimous that the best way to tackle it is by investing much more in research and development in low-carbon energy technologies. The economists also found that carbon emission cuts, tonight's motion, would be the poorest use of our money. I commend this motion to you. Do what's rational, not what's just fashionable. Thank you.
If Kyoto was the treaty that was supposed to slow the growth of greenhouse gases, it has failed, and Oliver Tickell has come up with Kyoto 2, an environmental blueprint. Environment is his passion, and he is next arguing against the motion. Ladies and gentlemen, Oliver Tickell.
Bjorn did an excellent presentation, and he made very effective use of a particular rhetorical flourish, which I would call the false choice. Either we address the problem of global warming, or we address the problems of malaria, water provision, and malnutrition. This is a false choice. No one's saying that we've got to do one or other. We can do both. It is no more real a choice than that between tackling global warming and eating pizza. In fact, if we tackle the problems of global warming in an effective way, it will directly help with the provision of water. Now, the core point, though, actually, Bjorn very kindly began to make it for me. It is that the consequences of not dealing with global warming are potentially catastrophic. What we do know is that 55 million years ago, temperatures were 10 degrees warmer than they are now. Carbon dioxide levels were approximately 1,000 parts per million, and sea levels were approximately 250 feet higher. No, we have been there before, we can go there again. To avoid this, you have to spend money. But If we look at the amounts of money, I mean my costing, which includes not only mitigation, but also substantial funding for adaptation, which is already taking place, is about $1 trillion per year. And that is roughly the same as what the world spends on weaponry and the military sector. So if we can afford to spend that on weapons, why can't we afford to spend it to prevent this potentially ruinous catastrophe that could come upon us? But I will go a stage further, and I will say that actually much of this isn't really cost at all. It is investment, because we need, ultimately, to move away from fossil fuels anyway. If we move away from fossil fuels sooner, before we have to because they run, that actually saves enormous economic cost. It saves the economic cost of $150 a barrel petrol, oil, and that is something that has caused America and other countries huge hardship. We can create new industries. We have huge idle workforces. We have huge idle productive capacity in industries that can be put back to work, building us a future free of fossil fuels. So in answer to the question, is it worth the money to make these major reductions in carbon dioxide emissions? The only possible answer is yes, and do it now.
Our motion is major reductions in carbon emissions are not worth the money, and now arguing for the motion, Peter Huber, an author who publishes here in the United States books with titles like The Bottomless Well, but I'd like to look at the subtitles that tell us really what he thinks. One of his books was subtitled Saving the Environment from the Environmentalists, another Why We Will Never Run Out of Energy. Ladies and gentlemen, Peter Huber.
Well, while he was running, Barack Obama was heard to say that he would bankrupt our coal industry. Now, I don't doubt Washington's ability to bankrupt almost anything, but China is currently adding 100 gigs of coal electricity a year. There is no end in sight, and there are other countries all across the globe following exactly in its footsteps. We rich people of the planet can't stop the other 5 billion poor people from burning a couple of trillion tons of carbon that they have within easy reach. And if we are foolish enough, which we could well be, we will let carbon worries send our jobs to their shores, and they will grow even faster, and carbon emissions will grow faster still. Poor countries all around this planet are sitting on a trillion tons of readily accessible coal. We no longer control demand for carbon either. The 5 billion poor people are already the main problem, not us. If you have heard otherwise, you have heard wrong. Collectively, the poor already emit 20% more greenhouse gas than we do. We burn a lot more carbon individually, of course, but they have a lot more children. Their fecundity has beaten out our gluttony, and the gap is now widening very fast. China, not the United States, is now the largest emitter of greenhouse gas on the planet, and it will soon be joined by others. It's only a matter of time. So, it really does come down to this. First, can we give the world something cheaper than carbon? The moonshot law of economics says, why, yes, we can. If we just really put our minds to it, it will happen. Atom bomb, moon landing, energy, you name it. No, not this time. Fossil fuels are very cheap because they concentrate a lot of energy in a small space. You find a mountain of coal and you can just shovel gargantuan amounts of energy into the boxcars. Renewable fuels like sun and wind are much harder. Windmills are now 50-story skyscrapers, yet one windmill generates a piddling 2 megawatts. China and India won't trade 3-cent coal for 15-cent wind or 30-cent solar. And if we force those expensive technologies on ourselves, we will certainly end up doing more harm than good. Frantically chasing the impossible and falling flat on your face doesn't make things better. It often makes things worse, and it's never worth the money.
now, back to the debate, is reducing carbon emissions worth the cost?
Arguing against the motion, Adam Werbach. And in the 90s, Adam Werbach was the whiz kid of the environmentalist movement. At 23, he was the president of the Sierra Club. His views have evolved since then, and recently he has been consulting for Walmart. Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Werbach.
Mr. Huber, I want to thank you for your novel argument, summed up as, "No, we can't." You begin by saying you care about the world's poor, and then you start by saying the 5 billion poor people are the problem. We're going to send our jobs to their shores. They have too many children. This type of contempt will not lead us towards the world that we want to build for our kids, either here or across the world. The question at hand, and the question we face, is, are major reductions in carbon worth the money? And I'll very simply give examples at the level of the economy, at the level of a corporation, and the level of the individual. Americans spend about a week a year, if they commute a lot, stuck in their cars. That costs the economy in terms of productivity and fuel cost about $78 billion a year. If we invested in new traffic software and signaling, public transportation to create those green jobs that you have such contempt for, we could, in fact, reduce that. Major carbon reductions are worth the money. At the level of a corporation, more and more corporations are not just doing it because it's fashionable. They're doing it because they're building a strategy for sustainability to move them forward. Walmart made three commitments in its turnaround. One, to be powered 100% by renewable energy, which would be a major reduction in carbon. Two, to produce zero waste. They pushed this down the supply chain. It pulled energy out, lowering the cost of the products, lowering the cost to the consumer. And one of the reasons a company like Walmart is doing so well right now is that they become more efficient because of a focus on major reductions in carbon. Our opponents tend to focus on the fact that we can't do everything and that there are other problems. And yes, there are other problems and we need to work on them. For example, I could tell you tonight that there are exit signs at the back of the theater, and there's one at the side of the theater, and that's probably very important in case there were a fire. But maybe I could instead tell you about influenza, because that's the eighth largest killer in America, and it might tell you to worry about the person next to you because they might be a little sickly. These things are all true, but we can do two things at once. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. And the great thing about carbon is that it's one single thread. If you pull it, the entire sweater begins to unravel. Major reductions in carbon are good for the economy and are absolutely worth the money. Thank you.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. The motion up for debate is, major reductions in carbon emissions are not worth the money. Stay with us. Arguing next for the motion, Philip Stott, Professor Emeritus from the University of London. His specialty carries the distinct and revealing name of biogeographer. He is an expert in many things, from the nature of fire to the behavior of soil. And tonight he is arguing for the motion.
Adam and colleagues, I really wish I could believe that we can manage the costs that would control climate. Very sadly, I have to quote Samuel Johnson, the great British lexicographer. An obstinate stubbornness, a rationality, stops me believing it. And with a twinkle in my eye, because we're in New York and near Wall Street, what I want to show, very dangerously, is that climate science and these costs are subprime science, subprime economics, and above all, subprime politics. And they will cost us dear, despite what Adam and Oliver and Hunter will be saying. And we've got to be very, very careful. But I just want you to have one image, and it's a very serious scientific image. I want you to think of the world from inner Siberia to Greenland, then to Singapore, and then come to the Arab states and to Sahara. What, ladies and gentlemen, is the temperature range I have just covered? It is from minus 20 degrees C to nearly 50 degrees C, a range of 70 degrees C in which humanity has adapted and learnt to live. We are talking about, ignoring the extremes that Oliver said, a prediction of 2 to 3 degrees C. What a funk! I'm very serious. What a funk! Humanity lives successfully from Greenland to Singapore to Saudi Arabia. 70 degrees C. Climate is the most complex, coupled, non-linear, chaotic system known to man. Of course there are human influences in it. Nobody denies that. But what outcome will they get by fiddling with one variable at the margins? I'm sorry, it's scientific nonsense. They've forgotten the famous Jevons paradox. Professor Jevons from my own country, University College London, that actually when you save on energy, you don't really save, you simply transfer it to new energy costs and actually probably issue more CO2. So when you save energy, you take another holiday, you take another flight, your CO2 increases. And he demonstrated that in the 19th century. Have we forgotten this basic economics? But it's the politics then, finally, subprime politics. We are full of eco-posers, and in the United States, you have some gems. I don't think I need to mention them. But let me come back to Johnson again, because Johnson said everything in a very, very brilliant book that he wrote in the 18th century there called Rasselas. He talks of an astronomer who claims that he can control climate. This is what he says. The sun has listened to my dictates and passed from tropic to tropic by my direction. The clouds at my call have poured their waters. And what does Johnson say about this astronomer? He was mad. And so are we if we actually believe we can control climate predictably. The costs in every sense will be enormous. Oh, mamma mia, we are the dancing queens. Let's give this global warming nonsense its Waterloo tonight. Thank you.
Finally, speaking against the motion, I'd like to introduce Elle Hunter-Lubbins. She is the founder of Natural Capitalism, an organization whose precepts are ecologically friendly development, and research tells us that Time magazine has named her a hero of the planet. Ladies and gentlemen, Hunter-Lubbins.
Are major reductions in carbon worth the money? That's what we're debating. We're not debating whether or not we can control the climate. We're not even debating what the climate will be. We're debating, are major reductions worth the money? And that's the only question, for better or for worse, that we're going to talk about tonight. My company walked into a company that has big warehouses, about a million square feet of warehouse, and boxes stacked floor to ceiling. Every 10 feet in the ceiling were 500-watt light bulbs shining down on the tops of boxes. The guys who worked down below had task lighting so they could see where they were going. We said, y'all have a switch? $650,000 saved the first year. Now, that is not a cost to deliver major carbon reductions. Zero cost. Now, this is what's called low-hanging fruit. We could cut half the carbon in the country.
Oh,
now, messages from Access Sacramento.